Moncrief on News Talk.
Imagine if you lived in Athlone, and 80 kilometres up the road in Galway City, a genocide was taking place. It's easy to forget that geographically, Israel is quite a small country, and the epoch-defining events the world is witnessing now are taking place just up the road from people living largely ordinary lives. Some approve of these actions, some oppose them, and some would prefer not to think about it. Paul Kearns is an Irish journalist who lives and works in Tel Aviv. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Yeah, in terms of the media that people are consuming, what story are they seeing coming from Gaza?
Well, it's important to say there's no one Israeli and there's no one media.
Sure.
The mainstream television channels certainly do not show what you or I or the rest of the world sees daily and haven't shown for the last 2 years. Those graphic, searing images of a child, you know, a dead child being picked up from rubble, etc. I've yet to see watching Israeli news, the mainstream channels, to show that image. But having said that, Haaretz, which is the paper of record, the centre-left paper in Israel, which is read by all the government and diplomatic community, etc., that's pretty graphic and in its storytelling and imagery, and is fiercely critical of the government.
Right, okay. And they're fiercely critical of the government because of the continued prosecution of the attacks on Gaza.
They're fiercely critical of the government for many reasons, including plausible genocide. They have those articles. They have some of the most investigative journalists in the world to expose Israeli war crimes. That's there. Is it read by all Israelis? No. Mm. I think people take their main news still from the TV stations and, of course, social media.
Yeah. And the TV stations, would they routinely mention Gaza? And if so, what do they say about it?
Well, you know, that's the extraordinary thing. Since the war started, or since October 7th attack, you have on the main three channels, one private, one state, two private. You have around from 6 o'clock in the evening till 10 o'clock, wall-to-wall solid coverage of the war. And in that, you have everything from repeated storylines around October the 7th, the impact on the Israeli economy, and also Gaza and the war in Gaza, the international reaction, you know, the division in Israel, a healthy political debate. And that's talked about for 4 hours every night for the past 2 years. But they do not show the images that we see or the rest of the world sees.
Okay. But do they report perhaps what the outside world's media is reporting about this?
They do, and increasingly they have to, particularly in light of, you know, the avalanche of plausible accusations of genocide from many international organizations, including two human rights organizations in Israel, which have, you know, quite high status in Israeli society. They've had to address. But any little hint that something might be amiss in terms of the reporting they grasp, like maybe the case the New York Times had to retract a story about particularly graphic images of a dying child who apparently had an underlying condition. Apparently that was true, but that story then became a big story in Israel. So all of a sudden, all the images of emaciated children were being disputed.
Right, okay. But so they will report the allegation of genocide, but perhaps go out of their way to undermine that.
They do, you know, I mean, you know, given the extent of the international reporting, particularly in the last 2 or 3 months, about an Israeli-induced famine and genocide, and people on the left here, including famous literary figures, etc., are increasingly using that word genocide, and I've used it in my own reporting. So people are talking about it; it's filtering through. I've noticed 6 months ago, a year ago, people would bristle if you brought up that word, and now. Less so, or you can't predict, of course. It depends on who you're speaking to.
Mm, yeah. Now, and in Tel Aviv, where you live, life is going on as normal, is it?
Life is going on as normal as you can imagine. Schools are open. Everything is working. Having said that, you know, every week there's an alarm from a rocket attack from Yemen, and you have to go to the shelters. And I suppose most importantly, all from many Israelis, is there's tens of thousands of troops in Gaza, including, you know, a lot of young 18, 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds. So everybody seems to know or have a relative or know somebody who's there. And of course, there's demonstrations. I mean, there's weekly demonstrations. You know, there's thousands on the street who now talk about genocide, but there's hundreds of thousands occasionally who are opposed to the war, but their priorities wouldn't be the impact of that war on Palestinians. It would be the hostages.
Yeah, of course. And so you conducted, I suppose, one could call it an experiment by trying to bring the matter up with your in-laws. How did that go?
Didn't go great, to be honest. It was a risky thing to do, but I thought it was an interesting thing to do because they're very middle Israel in terms of their politics. You know, neither particularly left, but certainly most would be hostile to Netanyahu and the government. So I thought, well, why not just ask, you know, a family together in a family situation, what do they think of the images of famine from Gaza? And as I wrote in the article, you know, most people didn't want to talk about it or said very little. One wife of a nephew got pretty agitated. She had friends who were killed on October the 7th. And I could understand that. And she was adamant that there was no genocide.
Yeah. And it, like, is there a sense of, well, they asked for it?
Again, from some people, there's no one Israeli, but you have heard, or I have heard in the past, maybe less so now, that, you know, that you can't, Hamas and Palestinians are, the Palestinian population are indivisible. And, you know, there's no such thing as an innocent Gazan, which is, you know, horrific, considering the amount of thousands of children have been killed. So I guess the political left here and most of the international community have been trying to stress that, you know, Hamas and the Palestinian population is not the same thing, and it's only the far right would suggest so, and they do so to justify the destruction. I mean, that's why I think the statement of Catherine Connolly yesterday about Hamas being intrinsic to Palestinian social fabric certainly was reported here and complicates the message, because ironically, in some ways, it bolsters the extremist argument for the far right that they are indivisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then again, like, I'm assuming if you're a middle class Israeli, you might have access to, you know, international news channels and that kind of stuff. So you would be aware of the kind of stark difference between the way it's being reported outside Israel and inside Israel.
Of course, there's no censorship. I mean, if anything, there's self-censorship. As I said, people trust the mainstream television channels for their diet of news every evening. And, you know, I think that's true all over the world. Israelis are no different. And Hebrew is the language of Israel for Jews. So people trust their own media in their own language at a time of war. And, you know, you could say we all live in our own narrative media bubbles, and every media has its biases and agendas. And you know, perhaps it would be odd if Irish people think somehow they're immune from that. You know, who decides the story of the day or the angle or the coverage, the decision? But there's no censorship of the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
You get your media feed from what you look for.
Yeah, because I'm wondering that when this is, God forbid, when this is all over, and hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later, and when perhaps within Israeli society there's a realization of exactly what was done in their name, you can't really say, oh, I didn't know.
I think it's very difficult to make that claim, no matter who you are, particularly organizations and institutions, you know, that matter, including, well, certainly the media, but including universities or other pillars of society. But certainly the average Israeli who, you know, is highly educated and many speak English, can say that. And I doubt if they will. And that's what I find interesting, because at the beginning of the war, the first 3 months, I might have had conversations with people who, let's say the conversations were extremely difficult. There was no acknowledgement at all of the horror of what was happening in Gaza. And today I can have those conversations. And in fact, they post in their social media, you know, posts or websites, etc., images like stop the war, stop the genocide. But it's a risky conversation to tell or ask them, when did you change your mind? I'd say for many, they will possibly claim they were opposed to the war for those reasons in the years to come. As I said, you know, there are thousands on the streets who show the graphic imagery of emaciated children and harrowing images of Palestinian kids. They are a minority, and they're a small minority, I have to say.
Yeah. And from your point of view, Paul, what do you think might change the calculus? Is Donald Trump the only person on the planet who could influence Netanyahu in this regard?
The short answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
There is no, you know, for all the talk of two-state solutions and threatened sanctions from the European Union, which somehow I doubt if there's meaningful economic sanctions, which, by the way, the left in Israel, people on the left, would welcome, especially distinguishing between, you know, the occupation and those who believe this government is committing war crimes, and many people do. But it's only going to come from Donald Trump.
Yeah. You mentioned Catherine Connolly there. As an Irishman living in Israel, is that ever uncomfortable for you, from Israelis sometimes?
They're very aware. I mean, I'm sure Irish people are also aware of the, especially for the last 2 years, the prickly and hostile relationship between the two countries and the diplomatic sort of war of words that has happened constantly. So that gets all reported here. So, you know, Irish people would have said in the past, you know, before all of this, you know, or Israelis would have said to me, you know, you're from Ireland, and they'd say the usual things that people say from all over the world. You know, they're interested, curious, you're friendly, blah, blah, blah. Now they qualify it by just saying you're against us, etc. And you know, you ask them why do you say that? And they're pretty educated, both from the reality of what's happening in Gaza, but also Irish history. But they also see in words at times from certain politicians or certain public figures in Ireland, language that they deem is unnecessary or just goes, you know, to the next stage of critique of Israel. That is, I mean, they wouldn't be shy of using the anti-Semitic card.
Yeah.
But at times, you know, the reality sometimes of that language is goes beyond what I feel is necessary. It actually undermines the argument against what the state is doing here.
Yeah. How can you see this ending, Paul? Within Israel, is there any sense of what Netanyahu's end game is? That when will he be satisfied?
It's a conversation on the news every day. I mean, before the attack in Qatar, the Hamas negotiators were, or there was an attempt on their lives, there was 500,000 people on the streets in Tel Aviv calling for an end to the war. 500,000. That's the population of 10 million Israelis. That's just extraordinary. And a week later, Netanyahu, you know, basically sabotages the talks. And one of the mothers, who is a very vocal representative of the hostages, she came on television and made an impassioned plea and said, "You just assassinated my son. He's 2 years in Gaza as a hostage." So his end game, it's impossible to predict. Many people believe it's, you know, self-preservation. He wants to stay as prime minister for as long as he can, and that he has far-right, extreme far-right coalition allies who will bolt if he does anything to end the war. But there's a growing, uncomfortable, perhaps, awareness among Israelis that this is perhaps his agenda. He's not doing this to stay in power. He believes in what he's doing in Gaza, which perhaps in his mind, or the far-right, will result in, you know, ethnic cleansing or transfer of 2 million Palestinians from Gaza.
Yeah.
There's an election in a year, and a lot will depend on that, I guess. A lot will hang on that.
Yeah. Paul, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That's Paul Kearns there, an Irish journalist, obviously, I heard they're based in Tel Aviv. excuse me. One texter says, how could any normal people be for genocide? I suppose Israelis are so brainwashed by their media. Well, I don't think you'd be hard-pressed to find an Israeli who would say it's genocide and I'm all for it. And there's probably, as Paul pointed out there, there's a range of opinion in Israel about what's happening in Gaza. But there certainly would be an opinion that that Hamas and Gazan are indistinguishable from each other, and And that opinion extends beyond the borders of Israel. I remember there was a piece in the Irish Times recently from someone who had emigrated back from New York, and he described a scenario where he was in a New York restaurant. He gets chatting to a Jewish couple, And the subject of Gaza comes up, and he kind of, you know, tiptoes around it. But he says, but we all agree that killing babies is wrong. To which they replied, well, they'll grow up to be terrorists, won't they? So, whoa, that's a hard attitude to deal with. It is incredible how people are able to compartmentalise, says his texter. This phenomenon has been witnessed in conflicts over the years. If you think back, we hear how terrible dictators were lovely to their family while ordering the death of others. It is difficult to fathom. Or indeed, that old friend Mussolini made the trains run on time. There's somebody else says, oh, great, Sean, another Israel bashing piece. Israel is one of the most high-tech countries in the world, and all Israelis have access to the internet, just as we have, and can see the images we see, but they understand it's a war where people, little babies included, get killed. It's a war against an organization. And would you be of the opinion that organization hasn't been defeated yet? And how many people would you have to kill before they deem it to be an actual victory? And is the answer to that all of them? Are you aware of the viewing platforms that some Israelis are visiting, says this person, complete with food and beverage vending machines overlooking the unfolding genocide? I've seen a news report on Channel 4 showing people, young people, actually taking selfies with a smouldering Gaza in the background. Someone else says, can we stop acting like this started on October the 7th? This all started in 1948 and has been a continuous attack on the Palestinian people. Well, certainly there's a wider context, of course, but you know, we can all agree that the reaction to October the 7th did develop into what now is clearly a genocide. The idea that the Irish media is reporting impartially, knowingly or not, on Gaza, and that we see the whole truth is arrogant, says this taxer. Well, I don't know who you mean by we. Let's say, for instance, you mean the kind of Irish public. This is being reported all over the world, more or less in those terms. Of course, you'll be able to find exceptions to that, but more or less in those terms, certainly if you look at the attitude among the United Nations, among most nations, the vast majority of nations on Earth now regard this as a genocide. So I don't know how you can be impartial about a genocide. Really? Can you? Life is normal. Look at Airbnb in Ascalon, Israel. People are holidaying as normal there. Well, of course, because life is carrying on completely, well, for the most part, completely normal there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.